Support for FAQ City comes from WFAE members and Bojangles. For over 40 years, Charlotte-based Bojangles has provided biscuits from scratch, hand-breaded fried chicken, and freshly steeped iced tea. More info on the 48-step biscuit-making process at bojanglesbiscuits.com.
Picture a perfect day on Lake Norman. The sun glints off the water, boats cut through waves, lake homes dot the shoreline. But if you stop and rewind the tape to, say, 60 years ago, instead, you'd be looking at dry land with some homes, mills, and other markers of human civilization. Hard as it is to imagine today, Lake Norman is not a natural body of water. It's entirely engineered by humans. And if you were to drain it someday, what might you find left at the bottom? We'll take a deep dive on this week's FAQ City. It's FAQ City, the podcast from WFAE where we take a new question every episode.
So many questions. So many questions.
And explain it here. I'm Nick Delacanel. Let's begin. So we're out on a dock on Lake Norman today. We're at Ramsey Creek Park. The lake is stretching out in front of us. And I'm here with Lauren Sullivan. She's a Mooresville resident, and she has this week's question. So what are you curious about?
I'm curious as to what was covered up when we made Lake Norman, what history might be lost or still down there, as well as how they went about moving out communities that lived there at the time. Because I know it wasn't just barren land. People live there. And when I wakeboard, I'm pretty much dancing in their sky. So I want to know what is below me when I'm out on the water.
It's fun to think that there could be remnants of a civilization beneath Lake Norman, like our own lost Atlantis. The lake was created in 1963 by Duke Power, and it's certainly big enough to hold an underwater city. It covers more than 32,000 acres, it has 520 miles of shoreline, and it touches four counties. Even President Trump was impressed when he made a trip to Charlotte, though he overstated its size.
Largest man-made lake in the world by far, right?
It's only the largest man-made lake in the state, but anyway. So you just want to know kind of how this was built and what might be underneath the waters.
Yes, exactly. What's underneath there? Because I know it's not just land.
Well, that's our topic today. What happened to the people living in Lake Norman's footprint and what got swallowed up by the water? Well, to get things started, let's call in an expert. Chuck McShane is his name. Lake Norman history is his game. He published a book on the subject titled A History of Lake Norman in 2014. He says, first of all, most of the trees and brush were cleared away by bulldozers in preparation for the lake.
It's actually kind of eerie to look at some of these old photos because it's all of this red dirt, this red clay. It looks like something from New Mexico or Arizona or something. It's just this pure red dirt for miles and miles.
But that said, not everything was cleared away. And if you were to rent some scuba gear and go diving, you could find some pretty cool remains beneath the surface.
For example, the Long Island Mill community, which is up on the very north end in Iredell and Catawba counties.
That was actually one of two mill villages submerged by the lake. The other was the East Mambo Mill. Between the two mills, there were about 120 families living in little mill houses. Both communities were bought by Duke Power and both closed in the years before the lake. Most of it was demolished, but the mill foundations and some of the larger pieces of machinery were left for the floodwaters to consume. Okay, what else is down there?
A few houses. There was one plantation house that they were trying to save, they're trying to dismantle and bring elsewhere. It wound up burning and they just left it there. Particularly in the deeper areas, certain things were left. For example, the North Carolina 73 Bridge.
The old one, of course, and just parts of it.
The Army Corps of Engineers used this as a training exercise to blow it up.
And then there are the cars.
There were some local legends. Can't verify that. There's a 1950 Lincoln down there as well.
There are also online videos of scuba divers swimming to the bottom of the lake and encountering an antique VW Beetle, a VW bus, and large industrial pipes, though there's no telling how long they've been down there. But if scuba diving isn't your thing, you might want to make friends with someone who has some sonar equipment. For example, I met up with a local fishing guide, Captain Gus Gupteson. We met at a popular sports bar near the lake.
We'd look at the bottom all the time. I mean, you wouldn't believe the equipment I've got. We've got electronic devices that show us almost as much as the search and rescue can find. In fact, for a while back, way back when, we had better equipment than they did.
Gus has been fishing on Lake Norman ever since it was created. He says he's out fishing almost every day, and he's seen some of those underwater landmarks. And he could add some other things to the list, too.
There's a dam up here around Long Island Marina that was flooded over. There's this and that here and there, and it's probably a secret graveyard somewhere nobody knows about.
More on that later.
There's probably more Harris Teeter grocery carts in the lake than anything else.
For the most part, his crew uses the underwater sonar to find abandoned roadways submerged under the lake.
We fish some of the roadbeds, because what happens with a roadbed is it's got a drainage ditch on each side of it, and the fish think that's a creek channel or something. And they follow it like a little path.
Makes for a good catch. So, to recap, a little fish swimming along the bottom of Lake Norman might find old mill machinery, a plantation home, a blown-up bridge, old cars and buses and roadways. That answers the first part of Lauren's question, what's still on the bottom of the lake. But how about part two? What happened to all the people who live there? Stay tuned. We'll get to that right after a short break. Hey, FAQ City fans. Did you know that you can use your smart speaker as a radio or to hear your favorite podcasts? That's right. You can tune in by asking your smart speaker to play WFAE or tell it to play your favorite podcast by saying, play the FAQ City podcast. And stick around. We're coming right back.
Support for FAQ City comes from WFAE members and Tyndall Subaru Gastonia, featuring the new Outback with EyeSight safety technology that sees problems and initiates action to help avoid trouble. Details at TyndallSubaru.com and on Facebook at Tyndall Subaru.
We're back and talking about the history of Lake Norman and what lies within its depths. So Lake Norman was created by Duke Power as part of a string of 13 man-made lakes along the Catawba River. The first was Lake Wylie, and all these lakes were formed to generate power for the region. Duke Energy actually made a short documentary on the history of the lake back in the early 90s. You can watch it inside the Energy Explorium Kids Museum, also created by Duke and located on the lake. The movie is narrated by a Mark Twain impersonator.
Well, the idea to begin harnessing the power of the Catawba River to generate electricity was conceived in the early 1900s by forward-thinking men like Gil Wylie, William States Lee, James Buchanan Duke.
As early as the 1920s, those three men were buying up land to make way for the lake. Chuck McShane, the historian, says beyond the mill villages, there wasn't really much there.
It was an extremely rural area during this time, very much focused on cotton farming, corn farming, cattle farming as well. There was at one time there were more cows in North Mecklenburg than there were people.
When the power company first started buying land in the 20s, they were offering residents about $44 an acre. If the residents sold, Duke leased them the land until construction began. If you were a mill worker, Duke made a deal that you could own your home if you paid to move it. Many folks accepted Duke's offers, but not all.
There were some farmers who tried to hold out, who didn't want to leave, who didn't want to move. There's even one person I write about in the book who refused to sell and was still paying taxes on the land as late as the 1980s. That was covered with water. That was on the bottom of the lake. He was paying for fire protection for the bottom of the lake just because he wanted to keep it in the family.
There were a handful of other residents who also held out, but it wasn't enough to stop Duke from purchasing rights to their properties through eminent domain. The company was determined, so much so that when workers encountered old cemeteries and burial sites in the land, they would track down the family members for permission to move the graves. And that was tough work, considering some of the graves dated back to the 1700s.
Putting ads in the paper to try to track down the next of kin for people that had been dead for 150 years, Revolutionary War soldiers, that sort of thing, finding new churches to move them to. Yeah, that was definitely a difficult task.
And in some cases, it was reported that with the family's permission, the tombstones removed, but the graves left in place. Back now to our question asker, Lauren. I asked if this was a satisfying answer.
Yes, that is satisfying. It's really interesting to know that there is some remnants down there of buildings and mills, and as well as this post-flooding attributes that have been added. What I think would be really cool is we could find someone that could create a map that could see your GPS location on the lake and overlay what it used to look like. So you could be like, hey, I'm over this bridge right now, or I'm over this road. And you could kind of like flashback in time as you're cruising the lake on the 4th of July or whatever.
Well, in fact, some students over at Davidson College did put together an Under Lake Norman map a few years ago. It's not GPS synced, but maybe that could be a future project. Check out the existing map at libraries.davidson.edu. Well, that's all the time we have this week. Special thanks to Chuck McShane, Captain Gus Gustafson, and the staff at Duke Energy's Energy Explorium. Hey, if you want to check out some of our past stories of Charlotte's hidden gems, take a dive into our past episodes. Find them on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, the NPR One app, and so many other places. And if you have a question about something in Charlotte that you've been wondering about, let us know. Send in your question by finding the submission box on our website, wfae.org/FAQCity. And who knows? We may get to the bottom of the answer in an upcoming installment. Until next time, I'm Nick Delacnow.
Support for FAQ City comes from WFAE members and Bojangles. For over 40 years, Charlotte-based Bojangles has provided biscuits from scratch, hand-breaded fried chicken, and freshly steeped iced tea. More info on the 48-step biscuit-making process at bojanglesbiscuits.com.